Welcome in to Run the Damn Podcast. I'm Rob Snyder alongside Craig Kalodny. Craig, a glorified post-game show for us. Obviously, if you're listening, it's Monday, at least already. But the game just ended. Patriots and Bills. Patriots defeat the Bills 23-20. Drake May in the second half was
incredible. 13 of 14, 184 yards.
You had remarkable. The stats up, not me. He was tremendous. Stephon Diggs, tremendous. Pat's defense played very well. And they get the big win. And again, a juiced up kicking ball. That field goal is good anyway. But that field goal was good from 74 yards. The dumbest thing in the world is letting them juice the kicking balls. That is not a topic for tonight. The topic is the Patriots winning this game. The topic is Drake May. Craig, you have a big takeaway from this game, which is what?
My biggest takeaway, Rob, and I really had to rack my brain in the few minutes since the game just ended. So I'm a little hyped up on a Sunday night.
All right.
I think this is the Patriots' biggest win since Super Bowl 53 against the Rams, which, keep in mind, February 2019, we're now October of 2025. So the Patriots have only won a handful of games that mattered over the last few years. And this was one where we talked about it last week about this is a measuring stick game. This is a game where let's see how they are. We didn't necessarily need them to win the game as far as like seeing their relevancy. But the more the game went on, you're like, wow, they can actually hang with this team. And you can see that their talent is, they're closing the gap with Buffalo. Did Buffalo play their best game? No. But the Patriots forced them into making some bad decisions. They played the game on their terms for the most part. And I think the biggest thing is that they show that they're here and that they are a team that will compete for a playoff spot. And obviously 2-0 in the division. Obviously, we still assume Buffalo is going to take that, which is fine. But the fact that May was incredible and the defense balled out specifically in the first half, it's you can't put into words as a fan of a team that has struggled over since Tom Brady left how big of a win this really is.
Yeah, two in a row, too, by the way, for the first time in 3 years. For me, the big takeaway that's not an individual guy, obviously Drake May, Stephon Diggs kind of take the cake there, but is that they were better tonight. This wasn't fluky. The score, you can look at a field goal game and say, oh, a lot of fluky things happened. Both teams had penalty issues. Both teams turned the ball over. Obviously, the Bills turned over three times, but none of it was like, crazy fluky. There was no defensive touchdown. The Pats didn't take advantage of them very well. So it's not like, oh, well, they won, but the Pats and Bills kind of gave them a touchdown. I mean, kicked a field goal after Keon Coleman's fumble deep in their own territory. So I think the story is, whether you think in the long term the Patriots are a better team than Bills this year, it doesn't matter to me. Today, the Patriots were the better team. And I think that goes a long way this season, is that you didn't just play the Bills and beat them in a fluky way. You beat them because you were better.
Yeah, and this was really their first, substantial test of the year. I mean, obviously the Steelers are 3-1, whatever. But for me, Rob, this was clearly a game where it was, let's just see how we stack up here. And again, they showed up, they showed out. To me, May's the story along with Diggs. I think you and I were texting during the game. It's amazing what a number one receiver will do. How many for the last few years we've seen all these guys masquerading around as number one receivers, and they're really like threes and fours. So it's amazing. The other thing with Diggs, and I want to hear your thoughts on him, obviously, his recovery is remarkable from the injury. But I also love the biggest thing that I love in his game. He's always moving. He's never, when May's outside the pocket, he's always moving. He's also catching the ball and going upfield the second he catches it. He's not this guy who's going backwards, going sideways. He understands how to play the position. And it really just it's refreshing to see when we've gone a few years now where it's just every guy's going sideways, going backwards, dropping passes. It's going to help May so much, as we've talked about, obviously, in previous episodes.
Yeah, he runs his routes full speed every down. And it seems like something that should be easy, but there's a lot of receivers around the league that don't do that. Mm-hmm. They're not all out 100% on every route. And the great thing with Diggs is his issues have never been football issues. I mean, he was awesome in Minnesota. He was awesome in Buffalo. Houston, he got hurt, but like he's never not been good. This is not like abnormal for him. Mm-hmm. It's not an aberration. His issues have been off the field, and seemingly those things have been semi-fixed. I think he's a good teammate now, and that's important. If he has some side issues in his personal life, and that's not for the team to worry about at the moment. Maybe they eventually will, but I don't think it's a problem right now. Mm-hmm. But he's a good teammate, And he runs his ass off every single time he's out there. And I think it's very clear. Let's hit Drake.
Well, can I do one more thing on Diggs real quick? Just to wrap up Diggs.
Yep.
10 catches out of the 22 receptions tonight, or 22 completions.
Yeah, I think it was 12 targets, right?
Yep, 12 targets out of the 30. 146 of May's 273 yards. And again, this to me is the offense has changed the last 2 weeks, not just because Diggs has 100 yards in each game. It's that they've put him in the slot and they've removed Douglas from the slot. I think having Diggs in there, he knows how to space things in a zone. He knows how to beat his guy. He can beat a guy in man-to-man coverage. I just think the offense, there's a reason they've scored, you know, they scored 40 against Carolina and 23 in Buffalo tonight, is because Diggs is taking on a much more significant role in the offense.
Yeah, there was only one route I noticed where Douglas and Diggs were on the field at the same time, and it was that little stupid bubble screen to Douglas Diggs was blocking. It wasn't a marquee play in the game. I will say that Diggs, people talk about the May throw. The May throw was great. The Diggs catch on the sideline on that deep out, when he was rolling out, was ridiculous. The route when he decided to turn it back upfield was ridiculous. And I thought his sliding catch when he went down to the ground was also a catch that no one else in the Patriots makes. So
yeah, he knows how to position his he knows how to position his body. He knows where he is on the field at all times. He's just aware. It's just there's a talent. He's up here and the next guys are down here, and it's very obvious when you watch him play.
As far as May, who was obviously great tonight. So much. I think it was Steve Palazzolo who tweeted at one point, it's been 2 hours since quarterback threw from the pocket on either side. He was running for his life a lot, but he made some tremendous throws. I actually thought his best throw of the night was not on the run. It was, so you remember the 30-yard Diggs completion where he turned upfield? The play right before that, he threw that 24-yard pass over the middle to Hunter Henry. Yep. And it looked like he was going to escape to his right, and then he decided not to. He shifted his feet, backed back up into the pocket, and then threw that pass. I thought that was his best throw of the night.
Yeah, that was a big one. The other one, I think, to Booty on the last drive, on the game-winning field goal drive, with the zone coverage where Booty got behind the corner and kind of caught it on the sideline there.
Yeah, got to fit it in there, yeah.
Yeah. Look, he didn't look overwhelmed. We've talked a lot about how last year he barely had a win. And now he's up to 3 wins this year. Obviously, they're 1 win away matching their win total from last year. But you're starting to see his growth. And I think the other big thing is that you can't discount the McDaniels factor. I think they are putting May in positions, and obviously Vrabel's at the head of this too, but they're putting May in a position to make positive plays. I think one of the things that McDaniels has done, they're putting him in the right spots. He's being able to make the right reads. And I think it's a huge part of his development, and he's developing that confidence that he needs to be able to make those plays like the one he did to Booty at the end of the game, where it's like, look, we're tied. We're on the road in Buffalo. This is a huge play. And the play before that, when he kind of held off the defender and got it to Diggs, those two passes on that game winning drive, I think is because of the confidence that he developed throughout the entire game, where he's like, you know what? I can do this. We can come into Buffalo, beat the NFL MVP. And again, they largely did it because of his, his ability to keep the offense moving and ahead of the chains and always being able to make the right play when they,
They didn't coach like they were afraid that he would turn it over. And I think that's a big part of his development is like, it's not just getting the turnovers out of the game. It's getting them out of the game while still playing quarterback the way he plays quarterback. Josh, we talked about it right before we came on. Josh McDaniels, as an offensive coordinator, it's outrageous that his offenses when he was a head coach were so bad.
Right.
And then he's so good at just being an OC. I wonder if the head coach stuff just got to him. But A+ from McDaniels again in this game. And like they're not really running the ball well. But when they run it, they're like, effective enough. Part of it is they spread out the carries a lot. I think May put himself in danger a little too much tonight running the ball, but that's not really designed. That's just kind of him scrambling.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think McDaniels has been awesome. A+ game from McDaniels. I would say B-ish game from Vrabel. We could talk about that again later. I thought the end of the first half was disgusting. But, staying positive here off such a gigantic win. McDaniels has been truly great, and it's not necessarily that they're like running like crazy stuff, but they are scheming guys open with just the scheme that he runs. And it's a huge positive sign, I think.
And I think one of the other big things, Rob, that they talked about in the preseason, it might've been training camp, but they talked about having May, when he escapes the pocket, not just become a runner and being able to make plays with his arm.
Did they mention that on the broadcast tonight at all?
Yeah,
just did they mention that? Was that mentioned? Yeah. That he should keep his head up the way Josh Allen keeps his head up? Was that mentioned at all?
It's, you know, it's a, yeah, that's a whole, all of the broadcasts, although to be honest, it's better than hearing Chris Myers call the games and the guys that the Patriots fans have been subject to listening to broadcast these games in recent years and recent weeks. But
Drake May. Yeah, it's a touchdown.
Yes. I think it's one of those things where I think McDaniels, you look at compared to last year and it's easy. And we all love AVP as a person, but Alex Van Pelt, clearly a quarterback's coach, not a coordinator. Yeah. And I think it's just having McDaniels back was a big thing, whether or not Vrabel actually wanted him here or not is a whole other conversation, but it's clearly working. The offense looks better there. And I like that they're just making adjustments. Like we talked about with Diggs going in the slot. I think they're prioritizing the receivers. They're getting the ball to their best playmakers. And I think the only negative for me on the offensive side of the ball is Stevenson. And look, credit to him for at least he has hands on the ball like probably 10 more times after he fumbled. If he
held my breath every time. Yeah.
How is he your next man up on the return? Like the guy fumbles every time he touches the ball. Here, let's go have him return kickoffs.
I think the issue tonight was the amount of active running backs they had, and then Gibson gets hurt, and it looks like it's going to be a long-term injury. But, Gibson leaves the game, and suddenly they don't have a choice but to put Ramondre back in, which maybe is a confidence booster for him. But the way that kickoff works now, with the way the blocking is there, it's kind of a running back position, the return game. So, of course they kicked it right to him. Smart job by the Bills. But, I held my breath every time they handed it to him.
And listen, credit to Stevenson for, I don't know how the Patriots decided they're going to give him the ball on those last few carries when they're setting up for the field goal. It's like, dude, like this guy's, I've seen this guy fumble like more times than I can, than I want to count. Yeah. And it's amazing that they gave him the ball, and look, credit to him. He held on to it. But my God, it's just only a matter of time before he fumbles again.
Yeah. One more thing on the offense. Will Campbell's been awesome.
He has.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, a really good game. That's not easy. With Russo and Epinesa, that's not an easy task either sides or obviously he's staying on the side. They switch sides,
right?
And Bosa too. So yeah, I thought Will Campbell was really good.
Yeah, and he's getting obviously when they drafted him, throughout that whole draft process with his T-Rex arms and whatnot. Like, look, the guy's been great. Through five games, he has. It's amazing. They bring in Vidarian Lowe, last year's left tackle, for one play, and he commits a penalty. It's just nice.
I thought the guy next to him moved before he moved, but whatever.
You're a Vidarian Lowe apologist, but yeah. it's just amazing that what it's like to have a solid left tackle, a solid number one receiver, and a competent quarterback, and a good play caller. Now you're 3-2. You have this. You're going to the Saints. You're looking at. Ideally being 4-2.
Yeah.
And you're talking
might be looking at 6-2. Yeah.
Yeah. What do they have after the Saints?
God, it's disgusting. Browns Titans. Is that it? Or is there a game in between there? Hold on. I guess, people are looking at us for accuracy. So let me make sure it's out here. Saints, Titans, Browns, Titans, Browns,
Saints, Titans, Browns, Falcons. Then Bucks.
At Bucks.
Those four games should be wins. If you play like you did tonight, you should be 7-2 going into Tampa. But we all know it doesn't work that way. But look,
there'll be honestly, a game they don't play well.
I'll take 3-1. Give me 6-3. I'm good.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you know what else is funny but on the tackle thing? Is this was a bad tackle draft. I think the three best offensive players right now of the rookie class might be Will Campbell, Armon Membu, and Josh Simmons.
Yeah.
So yeah, take that. Tackle haters.
What do you want to get into next? Defense
aside the ball.
Yeah.
The two fumbles aside, the Marcus Jones pick was the turning point. Mm-hmm. before other turning points, a lot of turning points in this game.
Yeah.
But huge play. And he had another awesome pass breakup down the sideline at one point. Kind of surprised by Marcus Jones. I thought he was more of a gadget guy, like, you know, gadget guy either side of the ball, like, you know, put him in on defense here and there.
Yeah.
He surprised me tonight. Thought he played tremendous.
He's turned into a nice little slot, you know, corner for them. And again, it's easier for him to be a slot corner when Gonzalez and Davis are your top two corners on the outside. It's easier to kind of, you know, blend in as opposed to getting picked on. Look, I thought the defense played great. Kincaid had a big game, but other than that, I thought they controlled everybody else. I mean, they made Josh Allen work for everything. Obviously, the first half was incredible, holding them to only 3 points. But look, they helped Buffalo to 20 points at home. Buffalo scored over 30 points in every game. You know, they were averaging 33, so they held them basically two touchdowns less than they have in every, you know, on average this season. Milton Williams continues to be a beast. My God, he's just a stud up there. Like, and you always worry about guys that sign big contracts, and then it's like, oh, I'll just get fat and happy. No, not yet, at least. Seems like he wants to prove that he was worth that contract. Also, I'm guessing he's pretty happy he signed here instead of Carolina. But I think a lot of the other guys that we've talked about, too, Landry played a good game again. I thought Spillane has been better the last couple of weeks.
I was going to complain about him, but continue.
Yeah, Craig Woodson. You know, some of the safeties that, you know, we talked a lot about the safeties with Peppers getting cut and Duggar taking a backseat, but I think they're starting to find their, you know, like, you know how it takes time for a team to gel. You know, so the offensive line takes time to gel together. Sure. It looks like the defense is starting to round into form here after, you know, some struggles early in the year.
Yeah, Christian Gonzalez, by the way, he could have just taking the night. I don't think Josh Allen threw it on one time. I think the only time I saw him was when they showed him in between plays.
He had those couple plays at the end, though. The one on that third down.
Yeah, at the very end, yeah.
Let's set up the field goal. That was a
good one. I would like... I know football trade deadline is always, like, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind if the Pats went out and tried to trade for a linebacker. I'm not, like, in love with the Spillane-Christian Ellis thing. I thought getting Tavai back was a quiet good thing tonight.
Yeah.
I thought he made some plays, and anytime you can get Spillane or Christian Ellis kind of, you know, off the field for a play or two, I'm fine with that. The other thing is you have Milton Williams, you have Christian Barmore. They're obviously not going to play 100% of the snaps. No defensive lineman does. You know, you rotate these guys in and out, but crucial fourth quarter drives. Let's not have bit part defensive tackles committing back-to-back personal fouls. Let's get Milton Williams and Christian Barmore back in the game at that point.
Yeah, I noticed that as well with who is it with Durden and Farmer.
Penalties.
Like, and then Gibbons having the pass, you know, the defensive pass interference.
Yeah, what are we doing there? Who is Durden, by the way? I know that?
No.
Am I allowed to co-host a podcast where we talk Patriots and be like, I don't know who that guy is.
Well, you still work in sports. I don't. So I can get away with not knowing who Durden is. But what do you think his first name? What should we call him? Brian? What do you think?
They mentioned on the broadcast and I was like, I don't know who that guy is. No, I already forget. Like
Charles Durden.
It'd be funny if it was Craig.
But you know what? It stinks because he actually laid a pretty good hit on Allen, but of course he goes helmet to helmet. But
yeah,
I'm with you. You gotta have Barmore, Williams, even Tonga, who clogs up that middle. It's always tricky with Allen. We've seen it now for a number of years. Obviously, as the Patriots play him twice a year, it's hard to you gotta try to keep him contained in that pocket, not leave lanes for him to escape up the middle. He's just so good with his feet and getting outside the pocket. He's such a tank too to bring down, but. Yeah. I thought, you know, you can't really ask for much more than what they did tonight. I'm very impressed with the defense. And look, 20 points against Buffalo, 20 points allowed in Buffalo. I'll take it every time.
Exactly. Can we hit on one negative? Or are we still on positives?
No, I think we fit all of my positives. I'm ready to talk negative.
End of the first half.
Oh, what an abomination.
This like notion that in the league that if you leave any time on a clock, the other team is just going to score is ridiculous. You saw it tonight. The Patriots kicked a few game-winning field goal, and guess what? They kicked off, and the Bills had to run a play, and they didn't tie it.
And they didn't score.
At the end of the first half, Vrabel waiting 10 seconds before he actually takes that timeout to like, oh, well, you know, we want to make sure that after these two plays and you get the penalty and it resets the downs and you're you get the 1 yard line play, you don't get it. And then you're forced with 1 second left to make a decision. And he made the wrong one. You go for it there at the 1 yard line because it's a 1 yard play for a touchdown. They settle for the field goal. I know they won by three, blah, 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 blah. But I'm sorry.
But Rob,
you scored a touchdown there. You scored a touchdown there, and you're winning by more than three. So I don't look at that as like, oh, well, that decision was the right one because you won by three. I still think the decision was the wrong one. I still think some wasting 10 seconds off the clock was bad. They won. We'll move on. We're not going to, you know, crap on them for it. But that, in my opinion, was two bad choices down the stretch of the first half.
I blame the Chiefs and Bills for this because if the Chiefs had never come back from that 13-second thing in the playoff game, that just changed how it's like Steph Curry, like where you defend three-pointers. Like everything changed because of that. Yeah. You know, look, I know you have to manage the game carefully, and I thought overall Vrabel was fine tonight.
Yeah, he was.
You know, again, big game. Again, big. This was, again, their biggest game in a long time. I think it's just frustrating where, like, you don't need to count it down to whatever it was, like 18 seconds before you call the timeout there. You could easily do it at 25. I'm with you. You can't always assume they're going to score. It comes back to bite you because Diggs drew a penalty, and now you only have 4 seconds to try to get a touchdown. And, you know, Henry couldn't catch the pass. And now I just think, again, I'm with you. They won the game. Those 3 points were needed, blah, blah, blah. But I don't want to see him do that in the future. I want to see aggressive. Like, it was fine tonight, whatever, but be aggressive there. I think you need touchdowns to beat Buffalo. They obviously were fortunate enough to win. A lot of game got played out after that play, obviously, but yeah we were in agreement as that play happened.
Yeah, it was a little too conservative for my liking. Not even just the kicking the field goal, the letting time go before the timeout. Like, give me a break. Yeah. Give me a break. What are you, the 10 seconds that the Bills get the ball back? You're right about that.
Right.
You know, your defense is playing great too. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I actually don't have a lot of, I mentioned the personal fouls, the penalties all over the place.
A lot of flags.
You know, it's kind of been happening across the league. I haven't really seen, there's been too many games with like double digit penalties on one side or another. Did you have any other negatives that you wanted to point out?
I have one other negative. Like,
all right.
What's with the stupid whiteout with the fans? Like, what are we doing? Like, do we all need to, like, why is this a thing? Like, I see it at Celtics playoffs. Get like, why is this such a thing? Who the hell cares? Wear what you want to wear and show up how you want to show up. Why do you need to force this whole whiteout thing and make this lame, like, shot so you see, oh my god, they're in, oh my goodness, can you believe they did a whiteout, Rob? That's so cool.
Yep, I know. They get there's this, here. Yeah. I have no explanation for it except that it's organizations thinking that it's cool.
Too many people, too many cooks in the kitchen on that one. Just let it be.
Well, again, a tremendous, tremendous win by the Patriots, who, as you mentioned before we came on, currently a playoff team.
Yep.
Now, if the Chiefs win tomorrow, the Chiefs will jump them. But 3-2, you are 2-0 in your division. And you're well on your way to making some waves here with an easy schedule coming up.
Look, Rob, this is one of your toughest games of the year. You went into Buffalo and you won. There's not many games that on paper are going to be harder than going to Buffalo and winning. So, you know, hats off to the Pats. Great win. And, you know, again, a ton of good football, a ton of exciting things happened on Sunday before the Patriots played.
And speaking of the playoff race, because that just dovetails right into our next topic, is the AFC is down, and it continued today. The Chargers, second straight dud, home loss to the Commanders, who haven't been playing the best football. They take an early lead, and then it looked like they were basically like, we've had enough of this game. We're kind of done with this. So weak effort by the Chargers. They dropped to 3-2. And the other big one, the Ravens, look, I know I told you last week, I'm picking the Texans in this game.
Yep.
I didn't expect it to be 44-10.
No, that's a no show.
Either way, the Ravens have had problems on defense all year and it hasn't really been talked about much. But like Lamar out, they're digging themselves a hole that's going to be really hard to dig out of.
Overall, I think there's a lot of concern here with the Ravens. I think you know, you're gonna have to get to 10 wins most likely to get into the playoffs. They've now lost to the Bills, they've lost to the Texans. We've talked about their schedule being a little more difficult later on in the year as well. That's a difficult situation, and they might miss the playoffs. I don't think they've missed it with Lamar, right? So
no,
it's going to be interesting. And also, if he's not ready to go and they start to lose a little more, if they just decide, like, look, he's played a lot of football, we can't have him get hurt, we're not gonna make the playoffs anyway. So I mean, for me the Ravens were a big one. I also think the Broncos going into Philly, Rob, I know you're a Philly guy, but being down 17-3 on the road in the fourth quarter and pulling out a win there, very impressive. What are your thoughts on the Broncos Eagles?
Well, I used to love crapping on Sean Payton, but he's done a really, really good job there. And Vance Joseph has done an awesome job. Their defense is really, really good. You know, the Eagles kind of stepped on their own foot in that game. The refs kind of helped Denver a little bit, although I'm not a ref complainer, so it is what it is. A lot of weird, weird referee things in that game. But you blow a 2-touchdown lead, that's on you. But no, I like Denver. I you know, and they should have beaten the Colts early in the season too. Like they're a good 3-2. They're not like a weird 3-2. They're a good 3-2. So them I like. I think I still like them more than the Chargers. I know early in the season we both had the Chargers out, and then they made us look stupid. Now maybe we are
we're
back on the right side of that. But like even like Pittsburgh, do I trust? I don't know. Jacksonville, do I trust? I don't know. So no. Like, there's a lot to be had in the AFC. And I think they're in a good spot.
There's four teams, and I wrote this down before the Pats beat the Bills. Obviously, the Bills still fall in this category. But there's now four teams in the AFC. There's no undefeateds anymore, obviously. There's four teams in the AFC with one loss. To me, the Colts are the unique story. We've talked about them a few times. You know how many times they've punted in five games this year?
I think it was one in the first three games. And now my guess is going to be like three.
They've punted seven times in five games. Okay.
I was so very low.
they've punted like, so on average, a little less.
The Rams
game
was really competitive last week.
Yeah, they had four last week. They had two today. And
so seven times and four were in one game.
Again, I don't know if there's anything. Game in January and lose to whatever wildcard team comes to their stadium, but it's hard to not be impressed with what they've done. I mean, they're only losses against the Rams in LA. That's pretty impressive.
We'll call that your first shout out, because we're trying a new thing tonight. Instead of just flying through games here, we're going to do our shout outs where we shout out teams that we like or situations that we like throughout the week, and we'll go back and forth until we feel like we're done.
That was for all of our Indianapolis viewers.
That's so many of them. We're big Colts people here.
Yes.
So my first one, I wish this game mattered. Shout out Arizona Cardinals for having the funniest loss of the season.
Oh, this is good.
In one of the most epic games. Titans 22, Cardinals 21. The Cardinals they were up 21-6 and had a 73-yard touchdown run. And the running back drops the ball at the 1 yard line.
Looked like David
Johnson.
And it
goes out of bounds. And then later, they pick off Cam Ward and then immediately fumble the interception and then kick that interception back into the end zone. And the Titans recover for a touchdown.
Awesome.
And they end up blowing a 21-6 lead that way and giving up a game winning field goal in what has to be one of the most ridiculous and embarrassing losses of all time.
It's so good. So yeah, shout out is that a shout out for Tennessee or shout out for Arizona?
No, but Cardinals. Thank you for bringing back Football Follies. I need that game on VHS.
Yeah,
I need to copy that game on VHS.
I need Steve Sabol to give us some voiceover for that one.
So
get some NFL Films music. Am I even allowed to say that? All right, my other shout out. My second shout out. Do I want to go Lions or do I want to go Saints? I think I'm going to go Lions. We'll get to the Saints briefly in a second. Yeah. I just think the Lions, because they matter more. I think you know, they lost 27-13 to the Packers week one. Everyone was like, oh, they lost Aaron Glenn. They lost Ben Johnson. They're going to fall back to earth. No, they've just destroyed every team they've played since then. So shout out to Detroit. They're 4-1. They're rolling again. They clearly look like one of the top three teams in the NFC. So shout out Detroit.
Yeah, I agree. They were clearly that week one overreaction team that, you know, we all thought like, oh, here's the downfall. And then it clearly wasn't. I'm going to shout out the Bucks. Very entertaining win over the Seahawks today. And the Bucks are now 4-1. And all four wins are walk-off field goals, which is a totally unsustainable way of winning football games. But the Bucks keep doing it. They scored 38 against good defense, too. The Bucks are they're a very feisty team. I think the Seahawks are still a very feisty team. But, of course, Sam Darnold, big moment, throws a pick on his game-winning drive, and then it becomes the Bucks' game-winning drive. So, tough spot for him. But funny for the Bucks to keep the bit going.
Yeah, and look, we saw with the Vikings last year, they won all those one-score games, and it's, you know, eventually it catches up to you. But I'm with you. I think that was a fun game to watch with Tampa, Seattle, throwback uniforms, a lot of offense, a lot of back and forth, good quarterback play for the most part, good receiver play as well. Obviously, but yeah, Darnold throws a pick there, and it obviously costs him. But again, two, at least in my opinion, two very good teams. You know, Seattle obviously just missed the playoffs last year, barely. But yeah, two impressive teams. Before we move on to bottom five coaches, should we do the collective shout out for the Saints?
Getting their first W.
Shout
out Saints.
Shout out New Orleans. Get your beignets. I think it was, the over 4.5 is now looking a little dicey. Although it's still going to
under
look
four
good.
And a
it's,
half. Under four.
Sorry, under
dicey.
Under four
yeah.
and a half.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Patriots go there next week. But yeah, 23 straight points down that game against the Giants. Good for them. Good for what's his name? Who's the coach there?
It's Kellen Moore.
He's not in my bottom five somehow. So, spoiler.
He's not in mine anymore either. Yeah.
All right. Good. That's why I forgot him.
One extra shout out. Shout out Mark Sanchez for being arrested post being stabbed. I'm not going to be the one to read them to you, but you can look that up on your own.
Do that on your own. But my God, that's one of those tweets. You're like, is that a real tweet? And yes,
Yeah. What a fun thing to just like randomly pop up on my phone every once in a while. Yesterday, as I was out with the kids, I'm like, wait a minute, Mark just got arrested.
Yeah, that story changed. Stabbed. Yeah, that story changed quickly.
Yeah. Oh, he was stabbed, and he was still arrested.
Yeah.
All right. You want to hit your bottom five?
Yes. Do you want me to go through them all and then you go through yours and we'll kind of wrap up there? Or do you want to alternate?
No, you go through yours and then I'll go through mine.
Okay. In the shout out category, did not make it, but shout out Bill Belichick. If we did college coach, my goodness, that could be a whole offseason podcast episode. But all right, number five, Dave Canales. I know you won today, but you look completely overmatched when I watched you play a full, coach a full football game last week. You're still in my bottom five until proven otherwise. Number four, Zach Taylor. Zach Taylor's making my list. So here's you want to know what's fun about Zach Taylor, Rob?
He stinks.
I've been on this guy for a while. He's like Dave Canales' stepbrother. Zach Taylor. You know the Bengals have been outscored in the last three games, 113-37.
They're so bad.
They lost 48-10 to Minnesota, 28-3 to Denver, and then 37-24 today to the Lions, and they obviously got some garbage points at the end there. Yeah. I know you don't have Burrow, but Browning's won games in this league with Taylor as his head coach. You got to be better and at least competitive. So you're in my bottom five. Number three, Mike McDaniel. By the time I post this thing, he might be fired by the time I post this episode. Oh, but you know what? For right now at 12:13 in the morning, late Sunday night, early Monday morning, you're number three. You had a 17-0 lead against Carolina and you lost, and your only win this year is against the Jets. You're number three. Number two. Is it Brian Callahan? Is it Ben Callahan? Whatever his name is.
Brian Callahan, yep.
I know you won today, but you needed, as you talked about, the greatest like miracle of all time to get that. You have a negative 68-point differential. You're number two. Thank you, number two. Number one, Aaron Glenn. Even Kellen Moore has a win. Aaron Glenn came to the podium when he was introduced as the Jets head coach and being like, oh, we're going to do this. We're going to be tough, blah, blah, blah. They are getting destroyed every single week. They are a really bad football team. The AFC East, the bottom two teams in that division are trash. Bottom five. Let's hear yours.
All right. So number five, I have Brian Callahan. Again, even though you won today, his postgame locker room speech was like, he was basically like, we needed that today. We needed the opposing running back to drop the ball at the 1 yard line on his way into a score. And then we needed the guy who intercepted our pass to fumble and then kick it into the end zone for us to score a touchdown on.
And we needed the kicker to almost miss the kick. The kicker barely made the field goal to win it.
They might be worse today than they were before today's game, even though they won. Number four, I have Aaron Glenn. The only reason I don't have him higher is because I hadn't had him on my list yet. So I didn't want to like just jump him all the way up there.
Yeah, I had no problem doing that.
I was giving him like the benefit of the doubt because he was with the Jets. But then I'm like, no, he might be terrible. So I got Aaron Glenn there. Three. So I told you I don't have Kellen Moore either on my list.
Yeah,
I have Brian Daboll on my list.
Okay.
You can't lose to the Saints. You can't beat the Chargers and then lose to the Saints. And they had a lead too. Like it wasn't like it's like stuff happened early and they couldn't dig out of the hole. Which, right. They had a lead.
Yeah.
I know it's Jackson Dart. I don't care. It's the Saints and you lost by double digits. So Brian Daboll, you're on my list. Two is Mike McDaniel, who I can't believe he also wears capris. Don't trust a coach in capris.
Yeah. His shtick is worn.
I cannot believe they blew that game to the Panthers. That's basically like you had one job today to not get fired and you didn't accomplish it. So I think you should be. And for the bit, because we talked about it before, I have Bill Belichick number one.
Nice.
I looked this up today. and he has, so like, you know, Mike Lombardi with Bozo, like he's a lot of Bozos on his staff.
Yeah, of course.
Freddie Kitchens is like maybe the biggest non-Bozo on his staff, like a real offensive coordinator. Yeah. Do you know of all the teams in Division I college football, UNC is the fourth worst offense in the entire country?
Like, so I know we could do Belichick another time, but let's take a minute here. Like, how does this end for him? Like,
I think he gets fired after this year.
Yep.
And he goes back to like 33rd team or something.
Yep.
I think he might have ruined not all, but some of his on-air opportunities, because I think his credibility is kind of shot. And I think his legacy is a little bit knocked around. So I don't, you know, now they're not going to not put him on TV because his legacy, but I do think his credibility warrants maybe network second guessing whether to put him back on.
Do you think he ever coaches again in any capacity?
No, at any level, even as a coordinator,
would he ever coordinate? Or do you think?
I don't think he would. No, I think his ego is too big. I think he has too big of an ego to coordinate. And I don't. I mean, clearly, another college program wouldn't hire him. And I don't think. No. I think an NFL team already had. Like, what did Bill Belichick do since not getting hired as an NFL head coach to warrant getting hired as head coach? I went to UNC and I failed is not a reason to be hired again. And also, like, once again, he's proving that the cronies that he pulls along with him aren't good either. And there's not a single sign that he would ever do anything without that group.
Right. And it's just amazing how much and obviously we've lived it for a long time, the whole Brady Belichick debate. But everyone likes to bring up what Belichick did before he had Brady, like his Browns years and his couple years of the past before Brady, or his full year before Brady came in.
Yeah,
it's amazing what has happened post Brady leaving. So Brady leaves, wins a Super Bowl in his first year in Tampa, goes on to lead the league in passing yards, play a couple more years, whatever. Belichick makes it to just one more playoff game, gets blown out by 30 points, and then fizzles out, peters out in his last couple of years, then doesn't get a coaching offer in the NFL after he gets fired. The guy who has six Super Bowls, not one team wanted him. However many, seven, eight openings, whatever there was, nobody wanted him. It's absolutely incredible how much this has separated that debate. And clearly, you know, it's always going to be both of them. The correct answer is that they needed each other. But it's just crazy how Belichick has destroyed a lot of what he's done with his, not only obviously his off the field lifestyle with his, you know, with his new girlfriend or whatever, but also just not being able to land an NFL job, going to college, screwing that up. And it, like, he's 73 or whatever. Like, how long is he going to do this? Even if North Carolina was like, you know, we're going to keep you for another year, which I don't think they will.
No, I don't think, I think they'll fire him too. Yeah. To add insult to injury, like just even the smallest insult is look at the way Mac Jones has played.
Right.
It's just like another thing on top of, you know, little cherry on top of the cake is like, oh, by the way, the quarterback that you had that, you know, that didn't work out and he got blamed for it. Now he's in San Francisco and he's 3-0 with over 900 passing yards. That is another topic for another day, by the way. Yes. What the hell do the Niners do? Because they just gave Brock Purdy $53 million a year. He's $90 million dead cap next year. This is why I'm not against paying quarterbacks, but you cannot overpay quarterbacks because of the market when they're not good enough to be paid at that market.
When they're clearly a product of the system that they're in. Like if you have a special talent like a Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Mahomes, or, you know, whatever, but you can't do it to like a Sam Darnold type or, you know, like somebody like a Brock Purdy that clearly is, as we've seen with all the other quarterbacks that play for Kyle Shanahan, they all play well because the system is good. Good for Mac. It's fun to watch him play and see what happens and just kind of, again, nobody around here is wishing to have him back. Let's be clear about that, but nice to see him get a second, you know, lease on his NFL life.
Yeah. And that topic that I didn't want to happen is already happening is Kyle Shanahan gets his guy back. Oh, that's if he wanted him, he would draft. If you were the inventor of Facebook, you'd have invented Facebook, Kyle Shanahan. All right. Do you have anything else on your docket before we say goodbye at this 12:21 AM?
Wish for more primetime games like this because it is late. It was fun to do one right after the game as opposed to, you know, recording it, you know, hours after the game ends. So it was fun.
And it's, I had fun, some memories from the game.
Like, wait a minute, that happened. This is great. Huge win for the Patriots. And now let's see him build off of it. You know, don't get complacent. Let's make sure you bring your best game to New Orleans next week. And you know, let's not give the Saints a reason to think they can beat you.
Yeah. And so they'll be going for 3 in a row next week. Something they did do the last time they won back-to-back games, they actually won back-to-back games. So no milestone next week, but we'll have to wait and see if they win 4 in a row so we can look back at the last time that happened. Yeah. So that'll do it for us. A little primetime post-game edition of Run the Damn Podcast. I'm Rob Snyder. He's Craig Kolodny. And of course, we will see you next week.